Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. And we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our man, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD, presented by Bart Durham Injury Law. TD, good morning, buddy. How we doing?
Hey, good morning, man. I got to get me some music to play before I come on, you know. Stand back, there's a hurricane coming through.
My bad, I forgot TD's music, though. I did forget TD's music.
No, I'm saying like Ian, we're gonna come up with something new.
Yeah, we're going to put
that dates way back. Okay. Frank Wycheck came up with that way back in the day. So I'm honored to kind of remember him every time it plays. Hey, we were talking.
Hey, come on, PK, get up and dance. Get up and dance. Come on.
Dance.
All right.
Look at that foolish giant head bobbing around out there. Imagine, think how many ridiculous losses that guy's watched.
Jeez, taking some shots this morning.
Unbelievable.
Hey, I mean, it's the truth. It's the truth.
We were talking.
But it's all good.
We're talking a little bit about Cam Ward and like, not sophistication. How complex do you think this offense will be at the start? How complex do you think they ultimately envision it once he's, like, all the way there? Not necessarily this year, but, like, long term.
Yeah, well, I could tell you one thing I do like that they're doing already, and or they're not doing, to be frank with you. And I saw this firsthand with Carson Wentz. I saw it with Colin Kaepernick, where they would have these guys get on the move, roll them out. You got a half-field read, high-low. They'll flood that zone, and that's how you do it. They're letting Cam Ward see the whole field. So I definitely give them that. I do want to see them stick to the vertical part of it a little bit more, those seam routes. He loves to throw those. I would like to see Chimere Dike get open on a few more of those deep crossers from the slot. But I think overall, as you mentioned, you know, they have a pretty big reliance on the quick passing game. And it's pretty clear that they want to get Cam in a rhythm and have him, you know, be one of those type of passers that can sprinkle the ball downfield every once in a while as well. So, to me, I think they're kind of going in line. I would suggest featuring his deep passing game a little bit more because that's what he does really well. You look at his yards per attempt and his completion percentage last year, it was among the best in college football.
I think among the receivers that he's going to throw to, you know, a lot of fascination with the two fourth-round picks. I feel like, first off, it may be too simplistic. I kind of pair them, right? So kind of put DK with Lockett because he's more of a slot guy. Kind of put Io Manor with Jefferson. I know people are down on Jefferson. I feel like, though, those guys would eventually graduate into those slots. I generally feel like Io Manor is further along than DK, and Lockett is better than Jefferson, and we're more likely to see more Io Manor sooner than we are DK. You agreeing with that?
No, I agree fully. I think the big thing with Io Manor, he has to get more consistently tough.
Yeah, physical.
And I think we kind of saw that a little bit Tuesday in Atlanta, you know what I mean? And he said it. He said that was his worst practice at camp. So for him, it's the consistency. That's going to be something. And I think, you know, in talking to him, watching Calvin really is good for everybody, but for especially him, because he talked about how he sees the urgency that Ridley practices with. And he's like, man, if an established vet like him could have that urgency, how could I not? So that's a good thing.
TD, on the Tavondre Sweat front, you know, obviously, you know, hopefully he's back out on the field soon, but he has missed a lot of time here. So how concerning is that to you? How much do you think that may linger into the regular season, just the time that he's missed to this point?
Yeah, well, maybe it's because we're inching closer to week one, but none of us are really talking about Tavondre Sweat conditioning.
Yeah.
And then that being in Denver, because even the guys who are in good shape are going to struggle there, right? And so now we have a guy who is trying to catch up to shape. So that's going to be an issue for him and for the team. And we know that this team is so focused on collapsing the pocket right from the interior, because that's where their strength is. It's called spade to spade. They're not strong on the edge, so they got to collapse it from the interior, and sweat is a big part of doing that. So that is something I would be very concerned about if, you know, my success was tied to the results for the Titans.
On the Snead front, obviously back out on the practice field this week, we'll see, you know, how involved he gets in the team setting moving forward here. But the fact that he's back on the field, let's say he is ready to go by week one, how big of a deal is that for this secondary if he's anything close to what they hope he can be? Which I still have my doubts about.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal. Here's the thing, right? Cornerback is a position. It's probably one of the most independent positions, right? It's one, and especially the style of cornerback that Snead plays, it's one where you could just say, okay, that's your cat. Go get your cat.
Yep.
And just run with your cat. And that's all you do. So the big thing, and he said it the other day, the big thing is conditioning. He has to get himself into that shape to where, like I said yesterday, you're like a John Deere tractor, man. Like, you just keep going and going, and you don't break down. And we know that a breakdown is just calling a spade, almost inevitable at some point for Snead, where he is right now. So, you know, there's a give and a take with that. You got to manage him, and only that way will you be able to get the most out of him. But I don't think the Kansas City Snead is a guy that you're going to see.
The we've talked a lot about, you know, if you're a defense looking at this team, what they've done in the preseason, what you've read about out there as you're scouting and learning everything you can. Clearly, the thing to concentrate on taking away is Calvin Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
If you're successful at taking away Calvin Ridley, what's next for the Titans?
I think running game. You know, if I was Brian Callahan, when the stuff hits the fan, I'm going shoe to shoe, relying on where all the money is invested, and I'm telling those guys up front, hey, we are going to go. And you got a stable of running backs, you know, when Spears comes back, but even without him, you got Chestnut and Khalil Mullins. Mullins, man, he'll run right into your face. You know what I mean? So you got that, and you got Tony Pollard. I would run the ball, long story short. That would be when the stuff tightens up, that's where I would go, run the ball.
What's next in the passing game?
That's a good question.
The pregnant pause that we all have.
Yeah. The one thing I do like is going to have him working those seams.
Yeah.
And he showed that even, you know, with guys on him, he's going to go up and make the play. So that would probably be the next thing, probably feature him a little bit more. I would mix in some more short passes to Chig Okonkwo because, look, there's one thing Chig does well is yards after the catch. You know, we've seen it. And so I would try to find ways to get him the football and let him, you know, catch it and go.
TD, how do you think things are going to shake out for the Titans at inside linebacker here?
Oh, man, that's the million-dollar question. PK, you've seen the same thing. Cedric Gray is the guy getting the first snaps now, you know what I mean? And it's crazy because it was James Williams for the first 2 weeks, you know, but it's just amazing. Well, Atlanta, Gray was getting first snaps. But it's just amazing how a good outing will do for you. So I'm going to say James Williams still wins that job, but they're both going to play a lot of snaps. I can't see them, you know, in the 80 snap percentile. I think it'll be kind of like closer to a 60-40, 55. 50, you know, 45, something like that, something along those lines.
You know what I'm factoring in more, especially once Winston is healthy? Dime.
That three safety look.
Yeah. I mean, I think Diggs is actually going to be around. They got to find something for him. I think you're finding something for Winston where Winston is a safety and Hooker is up, and we're going to see a safety in that second linebacker position a lot too. So I think, you know, you can make a declaration of a starter, and it may not mean a lot. But the thing about Gray, TD, is, I mean, who's popped on defense?
Yep.
It's hard to find many guys. Barton's done some popping. You know, Jeff will do some popping. But, I mean, Cedric Gray in that game with two plays popped. Like, how many times have you said, wow, watching this defense this preseason? Two times for sure that were Cedric Gray.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. I think in game one, James Williams, he popped, but it wasn't as glaring, like running through a running back and helping, you know, get a sack. It wasn't like the INT, you know. But the thing that I like about Gray is he's starting to play fast, right? And the things are slowing down, and he's able to – I think he's a more natural linebacker than James Williams. But James Williams, I love having a guy like that where you could just, you know, put your arm around him and you just say, son, I need you to just go wreck stuff. And he'll do it, you know. So there's a give and a take with both of those guys. That's why, like we said in the press room the other day, you know, you can combine the two, man. You got something special. But to your point about the dime package, here's the thing, right? They have five safeties that, because Mike Brown could tackle too, but we know he'll be more special teams. So they got four safeties at a play, and all of them tackle well. And I think that's what's going to allow you to work a little more dime, because you're not really losing a whole lot as far as the playing against the run perspective is concerned.
Yeah, so set the edge better with these bigger guys and let force things into the middle. Let those guys be a big part of making the tackles. And you've done something. Robbie and I have been really down on the defense today. But there's something maybe they can hang their hat on, that they really do get back to being a team that can stop the run. Now, you stop the run and you force somebody to pass, then you got a whole nother, another problem.
Yeah, that's a whole nother issue. You know, the secondary, it's so-so, but they're not helped by an intense pass rush. Right. So you'd be amazed at how much the front end could do for the back end. So that's 100% right.
All right, TD, last thing for you here. How do you think things are going to shake out at punt returner? And what's kind of the scenario that you'd be looking for there just in terms of the numbers and making everything fit?
Well, I know they want DK to have that job, but, you know, Proche, the aggressive approach, I think Proche has earned a roster spot. You know what I mean? So I think Proche initially and eventually he'll cede it over to Chimere DK.
Well, we're looking forward to watching it all tonight, TD. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll see you soon, my friend.
See you later.
Yeah, for sure. See you later.
Absolutely. Teron Davenport every Friday morning at 8 o'clock here on the program, presented by Bart Durham Injury Law. We'll react to what TD had to say, take your thoughts on the Titans and the Vikings coming up tonight in the preseason finale. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. I got some tickets to give away to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. To caller number 7, 615-737-1025, caller 7 will win a pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. Decent chance you could find PK wandering around in the water park
up
there.
We just discussed my perimeter. And you said it's really not that far. How far is it?
I think it's like two and a half hours, somewhere in that neighborhood.
That's outside of the distance I'd go. Look, I like those places if they're not crowded. When are they not crowded?
I mean, that one's been pretty crowded most every time I've been.
Yeah, maybe when school gets back, if there's a couple of weeks there, maybe.
Maybe right. Maybe
during
right now.
A weekday.
Maybe the sweet spot to go.
Tuesday when school's out.
Yeah.
I'd take my kid out of school and go, but he can't miss school. He'd be like, I can't fall behind. I can't do it. Sounds great, but I can't.
2 hours, 30 minutes on the dot from Nashville to Santa Claus, Indiana. Yeah, could see PK there.
Maybe doable.
Could see Jay Cutler wandering around the field up there in Santa Claus, Indiana.
Could listen to a podcast. See, but then double it.
That's true.
Then you got to double
it. Got to come back.
Yeah.
Got to come back at that point. Interesting discussion with TD there of what he's looking for in the inside linebacker competition. He says, you know, James Williams could end up winning it at the end of the day. Gray is getting the ones reps right now. But to your point, like, how much are they going to use that third safety in the defensive packages out there? And, you know, you've talked about Diggs. Do you think he's going to have, I guess the way I'd phrase it, is a significant role on this defense? What do you make of how they're going to use him?
I don't know about how significant or how soon, but, you know, initially I thought, well, he comes in, he gets some film, spends some time with Cam, which would be cool, and then he's cut and you know, has put himself on display a little bit for the rest of the league. And this is not that. I think Denard Wilson sees a way to use him. which means that there's going to be a lot of packages. Now, I don't know that they're, you know, I say this all the time. They're not going to roll through everything every week.
Yeah.
So, you know, there may be weeks where Diggs doesn't get anything, or maybe he's even inactive because he's not going to help you on special teams. But there may be weeks where you see a lot of them based on matchups. So I think it gives them some pretty good flexibility. And look, they're not that talented.
Yep.
So when you're not that talented, if you could draw up matchups and get some of your better people. I mean, Kondre Diggs is a good player. He's getting older. He's getting slower. But, you know, I think maybe what they were thinking, maybe they could have done with Jamal Adams last year. Now they can do with Stephon Diggs.
So on the...
Who's much better?
Kondre Diggs, yes.
Kondre. Not Stephon.
You don't want him playing safety.
How did I make that slip?
You don't want him playing safety.
No.
He's got enough concerns to worry about out there, too. Stay off the boat. So on the defensive front, we've talked a lot today about concerns on the defensive side of the ball. You bring up the run defense and how equipped they are to stop that. You know, I've talked about it here on the show. You know, Charles Davis on the preseason broadcast has brought up in both games so far how basically Denard Wilson told him that nobody's running the ball in the Titans. And that just bothers me to no end. I wish people would stop talking about that. I wish you'd just go out there. Yeah, just go show me. I don't need anybody saying stuff like that. Just go show me that you can stop the run. Having said that, when you look at the way that their defense is structured right now, how equipped, how effective do you think they will actually be at putting that into practice and stopping the run?
Well, look, a side effect of not getting the level of edge rushers that they need, and let's be frank, some of the best edge rushers are not necessarily great run defenders. I mean, the best guys are all-around players, but then the next tier of guys probably are more skilled at getting to the passer than they are at setting the edge. It's hard to find an all-around guy. They didn't get the top guys. Arden Key is not an edge setter, but Femi Oladejo at the beginning should be good at that. He needs to grow as a pass rusher. Draymond Jones is definitely good at that, and he's got more of a body to do that. So they should be better on the edge doing that. Whoever the fourth guy is, and hopefully it's somebody other than Allie Gay or Harrell, could be a waiver pickup there. That guy needs to be good at it as well. And then you're counting on Simmons and Sweat. Sweat maybe not as much early. And the backup defensive lineman, Sebastian Joseph Day, who's a pretty good run defender. They should be better at it than they've been, than they were last year when it was a major disappointment. But where they still talked about it as if they were good, and where Jeff said, yeah, you know, outside of those three big runs, we stopped the run well, which just doesn't compute. And I think people
– outside of that 75-yarder they broke, did a good job.
Entirely sick of hearing. So they need to not talk about that they're good at it, say they intend to be good at it, go be good at it. This would be the ideal scenario. You're good at it against Denver, and you say that's what we plan to look like against the run.
Yep.
That's a standard that we set against the run. We did it. We're going to do it better next week. That's who we want to be. And there's the beginning of our identity. you know, I think they have corners who can tackle. Certainly Brownlee's good against the run. I think Baker can be. Don't know yet about Marcus Harris. Leaving Snead out there. Don't necessarily want to see Snead being particularly physical and putting himself in situations where he can get hurt. Safeties. You know, Hooker and Woods, I have no concern about in that. Cody Barton, no concern with regard to that. Gray and Williams have to prove that they have the nose to be in the right place, right? But if we're talking run defense with this defense, feel way better about that than with anything else.
Well, and again, like last year at times we saw all of it be a problem, whether that's run defense, stopping the pass, anything. Like it's still – unless LeJarius Sneed is just really, really good, it's hard for me to imagine this being a very good defense against the pass. So even if you're stopping the run, you may run into some issues against the pass. But, like, stop the run. It would be great to eliminate one part of that from your concern if you're talking about this defense.
Yeah, the traditional thinking is stop the run to force the pass so we can rush the passer in bad down and distance.
Yep.
Well, this team stopped the run to force the pass out of bad down and distances. That challenges the offense. But in second and eight, you know, it's not as disadvantageous to the offense against a defense that's not going to rush the passer well.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. A couple other things on the offensive side of the ball in advance of the game tonight that I want to get PK's thoughts on. We will do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership with a buzz. Is always about great service. Titans preseason finale tonight, taking on the Minnesota Vikings, and then got roster cutdown day next week. It's go time. Regular season right around the corner. Taking your thoughts on the Titans at 615-737-1025. PK, you know, obviously the same offensive staff is back from last year, and they've added Mike McCoy to the mix here. What's your sense for him as an offensive assistant, the impact he could have on the offense this year, and then in general, year two of Brian Callahan as a play caller? We talked earlier about the offensive line, the limitations last year on how that probably affected your playbook, what you could call, what you were comfortable with. Now you got a rookie quarterback, so it's a different set of challenges. So what do you make of kind of the staff offensively, how different or not different things could look this year from that standpoint? And what Brian Callahan's got to prove in year two, forget the head coach part of it, strictly as a play caller.
Well, I mean, he's got a better quarterback. We don't know how good Cam Ward's going to be, but I think it's fair to say he's better than Will Levis. So he's got better things to work with. The receiving core is not good, but it's better than what they had last year. The offensive line is you know, we don't know how good it is, but on its face, it's better than what they had last year. Okay, so a lot of these improvements, the fact that they're better at these spots are an indictment of how bad they were last year, but they are better. So Callahan has more of a chance to do more with better people. Are they better on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side of the ball? I think our conversation this morning tells you all you need to know about that. So there should be progress there. I think Brian Callahan is a smart guy. I think he learned a lot in terms of last year. Last year he came in and was really about scheme,
yep.
Right? I need to get this scheme in. I need to teach guys this scheme. We need to understand what we're doing with this scheme. We need to be able to execute this scheme. And he kind of lost the idea that in football there need to be a constant re-education, reminder, emphasis on a lot of fundamental stuff. Being clean with penalties, ball security, basics. Colt Anderson said at one point last year, you know exactly where I'm going.
I sure do.
I can't remember. Remind me who he was talking about and what the situation was. But he said, I thought he knew.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember who that specifically was about.
All right.
I will find that out.
That is kind of a telling quote that I think probably was reflective in other areas. And that was a rookie coach and a rookie special teams coordinator and a rookie offensive coordinator and a rookie defensive coordinator that probably collectively, starting with the head coach, assumed a little too much about what a football team understood,
yep,
and could do.
And that was the quote from Anderson, by the way. And he was talking in general, just said, early in the year, you can probably say I was assuming guys knew what they were doing.
I was assuming guys knew what they were doing, all right? That's a big flub, all right? But I also think, like, Callahan, coming into this offseason, admitted, but, you know, maybe he didn't come right out and admit it, but like Vrabel told me this. Like I had a conversation with him at the combine when we were having a beer, and I said, like, you guys never like said you blew it on stuff like Isaiah Wilson. Why wouldn't you just say like we messed up?
Yeah.
And he said, we cut him. He was a 26th pick, and we cut him. Like, that says it.
Well.
Right? So Callahan, by doing this, by installing this whole offseason thing, whether you like the eight-team thing or whatever, or find that hokey, the theme of the whole thing was to emphasize how the penalties killed them, was to emphasize how the turnovers killed them. And emphasizing that was to show if we don't do those things, how much better we can be. And, you know, look, if we cut this number to this number, look statistically what that did in the league. Look at the Rams. The Rams are, I think he used the Rams as an example.
Yeah.
Rams are a talented team, but they're not the most talented team. But they play clean football. And look what clean football does for the Rams.
Yeah, but
let's be the Rams. Let's play like the Rams play in terms of not killing ourselves, right? And we're going to go back to fundamental stuff that I don't think he emphasized that I didn't talk about this stuff last year. But this year, we're starting with this baseline about these themes. Now, there's a mea culpa built in there, right? He's not CYAing. He's being straightforward yep. and self-reflective. And I said after last year that one of the biggest things was going to be Brian Callahan self-assessing and self-correcting. And I think he's done a lot of that. Now, does it pay off? Does it fix their problems? I mean, I went to Nissan Stadium for the one practice they had there, you know? And the defensive line, they finish stretching and they do a little bit of special teams. And then the team, as it does with people who know how practice works, breaks into positions. And it goes over to do positional drills. So this is the first positional drill in a bigger setting than they've been in so far in camp. And I'm over with the defensive lineman. And I think it's, you know, it's an assistant coach has the green ball on a stick. So you're moving with the ball on a stick. And Jeff Simmons jumps off sides before the green ball moves on a stick. And I think to myself, well, somewhat symbolic that the first snap of the first moment in the first stadium practice after an entire season on working on self-inflicted wounds, boom.
Yep.
Same bleep. It's only a small moment.
Yeah. But that's
but if they false start on the first play in exactly. Denver, it's symbolic.
Well, that's what and that's,
if they drive on the first series, clean, no penalties, no negative plays, symbolic.
But isn't that but to your point, isn't that a lot of what we're looking for from Brian Callahan this year? Because like people we're going to get caught up too much in the record. And I'm not saying the record doesn't matter because ultimately that's the only thing that matters in professional sports. But, like, there's an understanding heading into this season that they're a bad football team. Like, their record's not going to be good, barring some sort of miracle from Cam Ward. So we know that heading into it. So, for me, I'm not saying the record's unimportant. But I'm also looking for exactly what you just talked about of last year they were a combination of a bad football team with a bad roster who killed themselves over and over and over again. Can you stop that this year? Like, can you stop beating yourself? You're not a talented enough roster. Like, your roster's in a spot where you're going to get beat, but don't beat yourself. Like, don't help help the other team more often. Like, that. I think it's a big part of how we're evaluating Callahan this year beyond the biggest part, which is Cam Ward.
I agree, but this is not going to be fun for people. We talked about this. How much fun is it going to be to see from week two to week three the Femi Oladejo hand placement,
not a lot.
Pass rushing is better. Well, how much fun is it going to be to look up? And this is the kind of story I'll write a month in. What are their penalties per game look like? what are their negative plays per game look like? What is their average third to go distance on offense and defense? That's not exciting football stuff. But if those numbers are all better, that is exactly what Brian Callahan should be gauged on. And so when people – and I should change my answer a little bit. This is a good conversation. When people ask me what Brian Callahan should be judged on, I've said, number one, Cam Ward progress.
Yep.
Number two, I think we just hit on it. Are these things better? These are benchmark things. They were terrible at this stuff last year with a bad team.
Well,
this team is more talented in some regards. Are they better at these things, which were terrible things last year? If they are, they're in better position in some of these games. Are they going to win them or not? We don't know.
Well,
they're not going to win a lot of them. But if they're better at these things, his points of emphasis are getting through, and they're cleaning up some stuff that they were horse bleep at.
Yep.
That's not insignificant.
Well, and if and on the flip side, if they're not better at those things,
that's
that gets
problem.
Back into the conversation of why I think this is more – it's a more nuanced conversation with Brian Callahan than just, well, you got to keep it continuity. You got to keep it for continuity. Like, if you get through another season – and they're still a team that just beats themselves left and right, and they can't stop taking penalties, and you know they don't make any adjustments from the first half to the second half, and they can't score more than 5 points in the second half. Like you're gonna look at Callahan in that, and you're gonna be like, it's not any better, man. Like that's a big part of his evaluation.
I'd say you could teach a bad football player not to jump offsides or false start to a degree, but then. You know, a bad football player is doing that because he's scared, right?
Yep.
I have to false start because this guy's going to be down my throat. Well, Dan Moore and J.C. Latham are good enough that they should be able to hold their spot and not be early.
Yep.
All right? So, if those guys are false starting, you've got an issue. Now, there are going to be some. Hell, the best team in the league. Philadelphia's got penalty
numbers.
They're
going to be perfect, yeah.
Right? But there's an acceptable penalty number, and there's an unacceptable penalty number, and they need to be far closer to the acceptable penalty number. There's also, you know, I don't know what their philosophy on this is, but I know that Jim Washburn, who had an excellent defensive line, had an acceptable number of offside.
Yeah.
His guys were twitchy, and he was okay because they were predicting the snap. And they got a lot out of that, you know, so they took a penalty once in a while in exchange for timing it up. And really, you know, that sack at that key moment maybe came as a result of Curse being twitchy twice earlier.
Right. 615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your thoughts to get to wrap up the show. We will do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Titans in their preseason finale tonight, taking on the Minnesota Vikings. Let's head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Adam in Portland to the program. Adam, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Robbie, man. PK, are you concerned about the kickers? Because apparently Jim Fossil's kid is supposed to be good, and our punter is already shanking kicks in both games. I know it's probably been hit on a little bit this week, but I haven't heard anything from you about it. Also, the kicker, as soon as we get momentum, this is what I think our whole season is going to look like. We make a play on defense, run it back. Immediately, the kicker misses the extra point, and I'm going, okay, it feels like we didn't even score. So that's kind of what I feel like you got to button up your kick game pretty quick to start making your team relevant, and I worry about these kickers.
Okay. It was one extra point. I mean, I think Joey Sly's been pretty good. My question is, how's Joey Sly do when it's a pressure situation? And you can't simulate that until he's in a pressure situation. If he's bad in a pressure situation, then, you know, they've judged him incorrectly. It's their job to kind of have a feel for how he's going to do in that. Remains to be seen. Hacker's not been particularly good. Fossil said, you know, he doesn't have any doubt about him. He's got the advantage of his first game being in altitude, which is friendly. Both of them do. So we'll see. Are they rock solid at the positions? No. Are there better alternatives there? You know, you have to have guys, you know, maybe they have guys in for tryouts before. Those guys are the guys on opening day. Now, the question is, do they establish themselves and are you comfortable there and do you have your guys for the year? Or do things go awry and then you end up in one of those things where you got to shop for an alternative and you hope you hit on that alternative, or you end up in this situation where you have a 3 or 4 punter or kicker season? I'd say have some faith in Fossil to start with. It's a much better situation than it's been under Aukerman or Anderson. But, you know, it's not a given.
So what's still left unbuttoned in your mind heading into tonight? You know, we've talked about inside linebacker. We've talked about punt returner. Anything beyond that that really catches your eye that you'll be looking out for tonight? I mean, we when you look at straight-up position battles, there's not a lot out there, right? Like, we got a pretty good idea of who the receivers are on this team, with the caveat of what are they doing at punt returner and how that factors in. We know that inside linebacker is a competition. And much past that, like, most of the spots I think are spoken for right now, especially in terms of starters. So
I would watch that second gunner spot. Okay. Who's playing opposite Bryce Oliver? I think there's something to be learned there. I would watch Ole Udo, 72, as a backup tackle.
Swing tackle.
I think he'd probably be left. Yeah, maybe swing. I would watch him as compared to John Ajukwu. I think those two guys might be competing for one spot. I would see if Blake Hance plays some tackle in addition to some guard. That would be telling. In terms of sorting out some of the backup stuff there. I would see if Jalen Duncan maybe doesn't play at all. Look for who doesn't play at all. Cuts are Tuesday.
Yep.
There are some guys that they're not going to want to get hurt before they cut them on Tuesday.
Can we tell anything about running back, you think, in this game? Depth behind there?
I think running back is set. Pollard, Spears, Chestnut, Mullings. I think who was the next guy that was good? Mims. I think Mims is a practice squatter. I think they're looking for a Chestnut replacement who could make a bid for carries, not just ahead of Mullings, but contend to challenge for carries
even
higher.
With Spears,
even with Pollard.
Yeah. Okay.
How about that one?
I like
how
that.
About that one?
Yeah. What, you know, Spears gonna? Do you think he'll be okay for week one?
No, I don't think he'll be okay for week one. This is a good question. I think it's probably at least 2 weeks. If you think it's going into 3 weeks, then maybe you consider putting him on a list and sacrificing a week to give yourself some.
Yep.
Some flexibility.
Do you use an IR spot so quick, huh?
Well, the other part of that,
what's
too,
what's the recall
is,
rule? I'm unfamiliar now.
There's only a few, I believe.
How many?
Eight, I want to say. I'll have to double check.
Eight recalls?
We're running out of time, unfortunately, for the show. But, yeah, a couple, I believe. I want to say it's 8 or 9 recalls a year.
The thing is, though, that, you know, even if he's out there, like, how long is it going to linger? Because we see it with that injury specific, when you're a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, I'd certainly err with him, man, on the end of
looks like 8 to return from IR.
There you go.
8.
So that would be one right off the hop.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on what his timetable is.
Yeah. I mean, it's
they're pretty,
it's very unfortunate that he got hurt.
I'd say this. They're pretty healthy overall.
They are.
You're going to have to deactivate, you know, from 53 to 48. It's not a big deal to deactivate Tajay Spears, so I'd take it back.
Well, we'll find out. Tonight's the last preseason game, roster cutdown day next Tuesday, and then the regular season is here. PK, great stuff today, brother. Thanks for being with me.
Yeah, this was a really good show. So if you missed it, go listen to it. I'm really glad to be here. And don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
Corey Curtis with Jake Lyman coming up next on Next Man Up. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.